Welcome to this week's edition of Politics in Full Sentences, an intelligent take on the week's politics with a strong lashing of free markets and free minds.
Welcome to Politics in Full Sentences. For those who love free markets and free minds, you're in good company if you do love those sort of things. So tonight it's Beth Horbrook and myself, and I'm Max Whitehead, your host. And we're going to be talking about the Labor election year bribes. That's right. The Labor Party have come up and are going to go through election year bribes. So we're going to talk about that in some depth. But Beth, you've been quite busy this week, I hear. Did you go up and I believe been talking to some farmers again?
Yeah, I've just been up to Whangarei today, up to the Kauri Sale Yards, and was invited up there to speak to a group of farmers about ACT's policies around the rural sector and to hear from them their concerns. They've got, obviously, there's a lot of things that are just sort of accumulating that are putting farmers under a lot of stress and concern and uncertainty, and it's, you know, as if they didn't already have enough to contend with. They're drowning in regulation, Resource Management Act, Building Act, Health and Safety Act. They're confronted with, you know, all the red tape surrounded those, just, you know, in the normal course of their business and all the costs associated with it. So if they weren't already drowning in a lot of regulation and red tape, we now have this, you know, the zero carbon bill, you know, you've got ETS and a fresh water policy, all sorts of things that are creating a lot of concern and uncertainty, particularly because a lot of the provisions in the bill, or what a lot of the restrictions and targets in the bill, are just unachievable. They just can't be put into practical, you know, and put into practice without, you know, really restricting a farmer's ability to farm their land.
So how were you received?
Oh, very positively.
So ACT thought of
very
quite well.
Positively. Very, very. Look, you know, I felt like, you know, the feeling I got was like it was 100% positivity from the group that I was speaking to. They have listened to David Seymour. They're really grateful that ACT fought back on the zero carbon bill. And they just feel just absolutely sidelined by National and New Zealand First. Well, New Zealand First went down the toilet when they went with Labor and the Greens. So they already, you know, felt they completely sold out on them at that point. But they were really, really shocked that National voted for the bill.
The talkback on radio has been that that a lot of National people are moving on to ACT as well, because the farmers are actually disappointed with National to support that zero carbon bill. Just can't believe it. In fact, they're astonished they'd even do that.
You know, there was a National MP there as well, and he explained why, you know, National had voted for it, you know, and it just still didn't go down well. And National are saying that, you know, they would roll back some of the provisions in the bill, you know, in their first 100 days of being elected. They would, you know, enact some amendments to the bill, but they're not to be trusted now.
No,
the farmers don't trust them. They're not trusting them because of the way they voted on the firearms law. They're not trusting them over the, you know, because of the way they voted on the zero carbon bill. So they really challenged this National MP. They said, how can we trust you, you know, but when you've done this to us? And they also wanted to talk a little bit about strategy, and
political strategy for the National Party.
Voting strategy. Voting, you know, as voters, you know, what should their strategy be? You know, they were all saying, we want to give our party vote to ACT, but we need to know that you'll work with them. Of course, no National MP is going to tell anybody to give their party vote to anyone else but National. I mean, that's just not part of their message.
No.
But they really want to hear that National will work with ACT. But they do understand that it's not a wasted vote. They made that quite clear as well. And, you know, National would like to, you know, get 50% of the seats, I'm sure, and that's the problem with the MMP. You know, to go for that 50%, they've moved so far into the centre that they're not really asking the hard questions or taking any political risk whatsoever. They don't take any political risks because they're too scared to. You know, ACT is quite happy to take all that political risk for them, take all the flak, ask the hard questions, and make a difference when we're in there. So I put it to them. I said, what kind of a government would you like to see? Would you like to see 60 National MPs and one ACT MP? Or would you like to see, maybe 55 National MPs and six ACT MPs? Think of the whole and what that makeup is. What do you think would deliver you a stronger government? And they all got it because, National was trying to tell them, look, if you give your party vote to ACT, you're taking votes away from Marsden. It doesn't take away anything. It strengthens them. It drags them back to the right of centre where they should be. And everyone there totally understood that message. And of course, we'd like to get votes off New Zealand First, and there's plenty of those to
put. Well, I think people must be learning that New Zealand First are really, really just there for their own purposes, and they prepare to use, taxpayers' money to try and buy some bribes. And we'll talk about that in more length later on.
But yeah.
I would think there's a lot of people who were with New Zealand First thing, and how great, good to see Winston Peters kicking backside, he's the man. But now they're like rolling their eyes and saying, well, what's he really doing?
They're polling at 4%. I can't remember how long it's been since they've been polling over 5%, so they'll be very lucky to get back into Parliament. But it's becoming very apparent that they've turned their back on their traditional support by going
before
with
you go into
that Greens.
Sorry to interrupt you, but just to finish off with the farmers, I just want to tell the viewers out there that we had a podcast here with Owen Jennings, ex ACT MP, and he went to Parliament, and you were here, Beth, and you made a big contribution to that. In fact, I think you made the fine statement at the end of it about putting the dignity and the respect back into farming. And by the way, that podcast, I believe, is actually top of the pops we've had since I've been hosting the show. So it goes to show, I think the farmers are listening to ACT, and I think they're going to be voting ACT. So that's Max Whitehead's prediction.
Owen was a great guest, and I can tell you that Owen is a great source of advice. Currently, I'm working on drafting our rural policy, and Owen's been a great source of advice, as have some other very learned people from around the country. And I'm learning a lot, and it meant that I can go out with confidence and speak to those farmers, feeling that I have quite a depth of understanding of what's concerning them.
So we're going to watch the space, Beth, because you're about to announce our policy next year, I suppose, aren't
you? Yeah, we'll be ready to announce that early next year.
Righto, farmers, you're listening to this show. Beth, you heard that. She'll be announcing our policy. Well, David will be, I guess, in terms of the farming policy. And I think that will be very interesting to some farmers. Mm. So if you've got any comments or if you want to make anything, just at the bottom of the podcast or in wherever we're transmitting now and you're picking it up, be interesting to hear your views. Would that be, you'd be welcome it, wouldn't you, Beth?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Because while we're drafting it, it's the issues that we need to know about, but it sounds like she's halfway there. So the other thing is, before we go back, and we need to go and talk about New Zealand First, because I'm pretty unhappy with that their performance lately as well. But getting on to it is the port's being moved up north. Now, you come from up north. We're halfway to the port.
I'm halfway, really. I don't know. I haven't seen any analysis really of the port being moved. I don't think any very strong analysis has been done. So, I mean, obviously, we'd have to see the full economic analysis of what it would cost to move it, and what might be lost or gained by moving it.
I haven't talked to Beth about this, but one thing from a selfish perspective, if I was you, Beth, I'd be interested to see those roads improve.
Well, that's a huge issue with moving the port. Is you'd have to upgrade all those roads as well, or there may be talk of upgrading the rail, but the roads. Look, we should have had that motorway.
Yeah.
That motorway from Warkworth to Wellsford
was
planned.
Would you have it now? Would it be there now?
Well, that's what I'd hope that
you better finish off. So what Beth's saying is that was in place. Well, you tell the story.
Yeah, well, that was all planned to have the, we're having the motorway built at the moment from Puhoi to Warkworth, and the next stage of it was to be sort of Warkworth to Wellsford, or actually a little bit further north of Wellsford. But when we had the change of government in 2017.
Wait for it. What did they do?
Julianne Genta said, no, we don't like cars. We don't want people travelling in cars, and changed the way, changed their investment focus for transport. So now it's all about bike lanes and safety and things like that. But we need infrastructure.
What's that big hill you drive over every day? I mean, you won't get a bike up there, and it's crazy.
Shedaways probably.
Yeah.
So a big part of that will have to be the transport. But it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me to to bring goods into Whangarei only to bring them back down to Auckland. And what are you taking out of Whangarei? You know, so you're either going to have to take goods up there to take them out, otherwise all that's going to really come out of that port is timber. So that's why, you know, you'd have to see the sums.
I host drinks on a Friday, and all the experts come round, and they get more of an expert after they've had a couple of drinks. But anyway, they were saying, and one guy got on the whiteboard and he showed it all, but the rail solution for getting the goods back to Auckland, you know, because that's where the biggest city is, he said there's a swamp all the way through that. The current rail, it would have to be upgraded totally, be a total rebuild, and also the swamp would not probably handle the trains
too.
That would go through.
And all the tunnels have to be made larger to fit the containers. You know, it's fraught with problems.
But what it is?
Look, let's face it. It is an election bribe. It's New Zealand First that want this to happen. Mm-hmm. It's an election bribe. They're trying to get Shane Jones elected into Northland. So they're saying they're going to bring jobs and bring all that business to the port in Northland, but it's just a blatant election bribe. You know, we'd have to see the sums.
And it's to get him elected up north. I mean, the rest of New Zealand's shaking its head, going, "What, really? North? Yeah." And look, I understand they do need to have their economy boosted to some degree. And Shane's got billions and billions of dollars in his back pocket. I don't know what he's doing with it, but to do that, but moving the port up there is going to really compromise some of the Auckland's commerce. And maybe there is better ports, I believe. So why they're going up north is obviously just to favour Shane, and Winston's backing at a million mile an hour as well, because he used to come from up there, didn't he?
Yeah,
he's from Whangarei, isn't he?
I think that's what's driving it. So unless they can come up with a economic proposition to prove that
if I was lucky enough to get into Parliament, I mean, I come from the Naki. Would I be putting a five lane highway through the Naki? No, I would feel guilty. How can these guys go and spend our money on something that makes them feel good? You know, it just doesn't seem fair, does it? And all right.
Very nice.
Talking about election bribes, and that's what our subject is tonight.
Yeah.
Labor's election year bribe. So we've got election year next year. Stand by, folks, because, Beth could be in Parliament. We don't know. And the really is looking interesting for ACT. But getting back to what Labor's doing, I think they're feeling the heat and a lot of their support's drifting. So what are they going to do? Well, take the money off us to go and give it back to us in some other means.
Well, I mean, they're also talking about borrowing money, and it's just a bit convenient, the timing of all of this, that we lead it going into an election year. So they're going to have a shopping list and probably try to, you know, get buy some votes out of it. So they're talking about, Grant Robertson's talking about borrowing, is it 19 billion dollars.
12, wasn't it? Was it 12 or 19?
Doesn't matter when you get into numbers up there. So anyway, he said they'll be. He hasn't named the projects, but he's talking about investing in transport, schools, regional development, the DHBs, but this is the one that gets.
Oh, you're excited on this one, yes?
Public estate decarbonisation. $200 million into public estate decarbonisation. Who knows what that means? I don't. Look, transport, fair enough. You know, if it's to build more roads, if it's to build that motorway that we lost, that would be fantastic. And I can see the sense in borrowing money on an asset. On that, you know, infrastructure, there is some sense in borrowing money, especially at the low rates they are now, because they've got such a long life. You know,
What twits are they? That was about to be built. They cancelled it. And now they're going to say, aren't we good? We're going to give you the roads you want.
I might be wishful thinking here, because to do so would be quite a turnaround.
Yeah, the Greens won't like it, will they?
And the Greens won't like it. So what he's spending transport money on, we're not sure. He's said schools, so is he building more schools? Yeah, perhaps that's a reason to borrow
money. Well, I heard no, it's the buildings.
But if it's just to you know, pay the operating costs of a school that's got behind on maintenance, well, that's not a reason to borrow money. You shouldn't be borrowing money for that kind of thing. Regional development, what's that? More money for Shane Jones?
Yeah.
Is that what regional development is?
Well, they did last time,
didn't they? Let's see the detail. And look, if there's something you could do for regional development that would benefit the most number of people, it would actually be, I think, to seal a lot of our unsealed roads. It's a huge issue up where I am.
Yeah.
You know, look, these are roads that service not only farms, but forestry, quarrying, quarries are needed for you know, building the roads as well. Sealing those roads would benefit the economy in such a huge way. I mean, farmers need to be able
How
to get
benefit,
their goods to market.
Beth?
But it's the transport costs. It's loose metal roads are unreliable. They have slips. They have often closed with detours. They're rough to drive on. They're very. Yeah, that's why they're slow. You know, farmers need to get their product to market in an efficient and timely manner. And these roads really, really hamper that. So, look, sealing roads, I would be up for that.
Plus, they're hazardous because, you know, they're so narrow.
Yeah, and they're dangerous as well.
And at night time, I mean, I used to,
And you get those big trucks hurtling along those very narrow sealed roads. And, of course, you've got a little bit more people moving into those areas. And, you know, car versus truck is not a great thing on
some of those narrow things. Slickers, we would like to see our roads fixed here because it's, I would think, Auckland's productivity is compromised. I think there's numbers out there in terms of percentage, but it'd be up to almost 15% of compromise on our productivity. And already the OECD judges New Zealand on poor productivity and the lack of roads transporting. Well, I mean, roads aren't there just for the family to go and take a Sunday drive. It's the veins running our blood on, and the blood's our economy.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
So look, you know, the $19 billion. Let's see what Grant Robertson's going to spend it on. He hasn't named the projects yet. As I say, probably wishful thinking around that motorway project. And if it comes through, that's a real turnaround.
TV1 did a poll, Beth. And they asked, what are the public interested in? What would they like that money spent on? And it came up, infrastructure, tick. Now, we all agree on that. And that's probably number one, but it's their fault we're like that. I mean, this government actually stopped it. And the next one is health and education. They're the standard ones that are around all the time. But I see the Nationals picking on security and crime. I don't understand what that's about, because where crime figures have dropped.
Yeah, I don't really know why they're going after those issues at the moment. They don't really seem to be resonating with a lot of people.
Well, the court system is slow. I can probably speak to this. The court system is slow, and a lot of people are held up, and there's injustices done by waiting and waiting and waiting.
Well, yeah, I'm sure
so they're going to pick that up. But will that resonate with the voters, as you've just said? And I don't think it will. Infrastructure will, because their baby. They won it. The National put it in place. So all they need, National needs and the government needs, is a good party in the middle to help make them the right decisions. Go act! That's what they're saying.
So what's our next topic that you got?
Oh, you're moving on. Righto. OECD's New Zealand's the highest taxed country in the Asian Pacific.
Yeah, these figures have just come out, so I don't know a lot of the detail on it, but you know that's a concern to hear that. We trade with a lot of those Asia Pacific partners, and if you're in a situation where you're being taxed more heavily, you know, that's got to drive production and things offshore to places where it's cheaper to do business. But look. It's no wonder we've got a Labor government in place, and they've what did they say? No new taxes. I've written the list here. They've increased fuel tax. We know about that. They've introduced a regional fuel tax for Auckland. They've extended that bright line test for owning a second home. From I think it was 2 years to 5 years. So in effect, it's a capital gains tax by stealth, and who knows how much more they'll extend it given any opportunity. Apparently, they've increased road user charges. They've ring fenced rental losses. So if you've got a rental property, they've ring fenced your losses to the income on that property, so you can't offset those losses against your other income. So in a way, increasing your tax liability. Tobacco taxes, they've continued to put those up, and they've introduced a visitor tax. You know, there's $35.
There's talk of putting the booze tax up as well.
Oh, no, not the booze tax.
No, that'll hurt.
And now, you know, the waste levy. So there's a lot of taxes gone on. So we can see...
Just remind me of her promise again.
No new taxes.
Yeah, and just listen to the list of bits just rattled off. Can I get back to this OECD report? I don't know if you can see this, folks, but you probably may not. But right at the top there... there's the top ranking country in the Asia Pacific area, and it's New Zealand. And right below it is Japan, Australia, Cook Islands, Korea, Fiji, Solomons, Samoa. It goes on down Thailand, Philippines, or less. And all these ones, they drift right down to the bottom to Indonesia. New Zealand is the highest taxed country. I think that's absolutely disgraceful. Beth, I think you watched it as much as I did. Today, our ACT leader went to Parliament and asked the question.
Yes, I saw that.
And we should tell them what happened. You want to tell it, or I will, if you like.
What did you see? I only caught it very quickly. But
the first question David asks is, does the government, you know, trust the OECD reports? And, of course, you know, yes, they obviously do. And then it went on to say, then he asked, the next question is, what do you think of New Zealand being rated so highly? And he started rattling off the names of the country. And then the speaker, Mr. Mallard, from which party? Oh, he's from Labour, ex-Labour Party, stopped him. He said, question not allowed.
Yeah, I thought that was I thought it was extraordinary, actually. I didn't understand.
There was
I was waiting to hear the end of the question as well. I think David was trying to frame the question in such a way that, you know, he could extract the answer he was looking for, and he needed to put some context around it. So all he was doing was putting context around the question, and he got cut down rather quickly.
Order, and David carries on reading about two more names, like I just read them out before, Australia, Cook Islands, Korea, and he said, right, you didn't stop when I told you, so you get no more questions to this subject.
You've been a very naughty boy, he told him, and really, you have to wonder if he just didn't like the line of questioning.
I like David coming back. That was so grossly unfair, the way you've treated me. And he said, I'm wasting my time even telling you that.
Yeah.
And I think it was as well.
There might be more to that story, and you know, I'd be interested to hear David as well.
Wow. How can a Speaker of the House, who's supposed to be unbiased and just controlling the House, be so biased? I mean, that to me is blatant.
Yeah. When I was up north today and I put in David's apologies for the gathering that I was at, I explained that the reason for him not being able to be there was that, you know, it was question time in the House today and he had his allotted question and you know, they only come up periodically. And that it's really important that David's in the Parliament taking advantage of every question he gets to ask, because he uses them so effectively. He uses them probably more effectively. If you've ever watched, you know, sat there and watched Parliament TV, David uses question time more effectively than any of
He makes the news all the time with his
other
questions.
National MPs.
He does.
That's right. And he's got a lot of fans there watching. They said, yep, good call.
Beth, we've got 8 minutes and I realise we haven't even talked about our big subject. Now, the big one is New Zealand First. Where are they rating now? What's their percentage they've got?
Well, last I saw they're polling at 4%. So, you know, they're under the threshold. I can't recall.
Under the threshold means what?
They don't 5%. They wouldn't get into Parliament. At 4%, they wouldn't get through.
And has their leader got a seat? He hasn't, has he?
No, they haven't got a seat. They probably haven't got any chance of winning a seat. They're probably trying to buy a seat up in Northland. But I think a lot of the Northland farmers particularly can see through that.
4% and ACT is at 2%. Is that right?
Yeah, we're at 2%. So, I mean, we've got a seat though. So, you know, we're at 2%. Well, at a true 2%, or just a little over 2%, we'd have 3 MPs. So, we'd very much like to see no New Zealand First MPs return, because we could easily take up, between National and ourselves, we could easily take up those seats.
Well, the momentum is building for ACT. There's a possibility you might even overtake them.
Well, I'd hope so. I mean, look, they're not performing very well. I mean, they've done, you know, the string of things. I think we started on an act, we've had a great year. We're going to talk more about that next week. But look, you know, there's just been a string of things. Firstly, they went with Labour and the Greens. They've turned their back on the farmers. You know, the firearms bill, zero carbon. You know, they haven't stood up for those essential roading projects that we've needed. You know, donations scandals, this provincial growth fund, which, you know, all of these things, they're not really doing themselves any favours at all. They're pork barrelling here and there. It's not going to be enough. So with a bit of luck, we'll see New Zealand First out of Parliament. That would make life so much easier for everybody, I think. Look, there's still a place for small parties, including ACT or as well as ACT. But look, New Zealand First.
I've got a feeling you've got a bias towards ACT, and you wouldn't vote for Winston. That's what I'm getting this feeling from.
Never, ever, ever.
Just perhaps.
Look, and I don't know anyone else that's voting for him too. And I've heard so many people say that they did give New Zealand First.
He's
their
tried
vote
the
last
rural community, and he did them a dirty on the zero carbon bill. I can't believe that. And of course, firearms is right in that area as well.
Yeah, I mean these are things that they expected him, well, New Zealand First, to stand up for, and they've just turned their back on them.
So Mr. Peters, he gets into government, he's
can't
the big man.
Trusted as the man.
Yeah, and he's only got a small minority. He gets up there with 7%, didn't he, votes, and he takes control of Parliament. And everyone knows he's the real Prime Minister.
Also, going into the last election, Winston had something like a dozen bottom lines. He always had bottom lines. He always talked about bottom lines, and we counted up about a dozen of them. I don't know if he's managed to keep to one of them.
I'll tell you what, one thing I'd be upset about, and I hope people up north are listening to this, because Winston Peters voted to scrap the motorway going up past Warkworth.
I know. What a betrayal. Total betrayal.
And now he's trying to ask you to vote for him, and he actually destroyed
total
that
betrayal.
Motorway. And that's one of the most restrictive things for commerce up north that there was.
They won't forget it for a long time.
I hope they don't. Is it the word up that way?
Absolutely. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Well, I think they're going to struggle, aren't they? Mm. I think they probably will struggle. Okay, so you're definitely not going to vote for them. What are you planning to? The cannabis reform bill is actually getting a lot of gravity in media, and people are, there's statistics out, Beth, that employers are actually becoming terrified that if this drug was legalized, that there'll be significant problems in the workforce. And look, being a good ACT people, we all think that people should be wise enough and able to manage themselves. But certainly I think there's a lot of people out there very concerned about it. Be very interesting to see what happens at that referendum.
So
really,
you're hearing this sort of from employers?
Yeah, well, that's my occupation is dealing with employment law. And that's where we're seeing there's some statistics. There's some the EMA have put out a poll, and it's come back, and I think it's like 60 to 70% of their poll says no way. This would be too hard for us to manage.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's going to referendum, so everyone will get to have their vote, and I'm sure between now and that time we'll hear a lot of information from both sides, and I think that's an important discussion to have.
It certainly will be. And get
all those points of view out there so that people can make
Just explain a little bit why the employers are against it. The health and safety laws make an employer responsible. We suspect if there's an accident in the workplace, a fatality would be worse. And it was found that somebody was under the influence. And, of course, they have to drug test them directly afterwards, and that's almost compulsory now. What we're concerned about is that employers, for failing to test their employees, will be penalised. So their prediction is that compulsory drug testing will be mandatory for employers, all employers who do anything it's to do with a bit of risk.
Mm. It does put a lot of responsibility on them. I understand it is going to put added responsibility and liabilities on employers. But I suppose at the moment, you already have a situation where someone can arrive at work under the influence of alcohol. Mm. So I'm not sure if it's much different from that. Perhaps the evidence of being under the influence of alcohol is easier to detect than being under the influence of cannabis. Although if it's being smoked, there would usually be a smell and redness around the eyes. But if it's taken in other forms, perhaps it might not be so obvious that they're under the influence. So a difficult one, I understand, for employers.
Well, we're about to wind up, but I just think that we ought to, in terms of the podcast, have respect for those that have been lost on the White Island tragedy. And I think we should have some words to say, in terms of that. Mm. If David was here, we'd probably ask him to. But what a tragedy for all of us. And my view is, look, I don't think any blame should be even thought about it right now. What we should be doing is supporting those poor people fighting for their lives in hospital right now.
Yeah. horrific tragedy. I just can't imagine the physical and emotional agony that those victims are going through, and the families that are waiting to find out the fate of the missing ones, presumed dead, obviously, on the island. So, absolute tragedy. I think it's too early to talk about whether White Island should ever be opened up again for tourism. Look, we've got to focus on those people that need the help at the moment.
We sure do. And look, on a brighter note, I want to thank Podcast New Zealand for allowing us to use their studios and for providing their facilities. And there's a guy over there, folks, you don't see, but he's not a bad guy. He's sitting there smiling away. So he looks after us very well. But if you want to go and look at us on a different area, you can watch this this podcast. Obviously, if you're seeing us now, you're seeing it on probably Facebook and David Seymour's page. You can go there and watch it on Facebook if those people are listening. You can go on YouTube and go to Act New Zealand, New Zealand in full words, and have a look at it. It's on Twitter, I believe, under David Seymour's name. And so I think we should wind it up. But thanks, Beth. Lovely
and
to see you.
And also it's on Podcast New Zealand's website as well.
Oh, it
and
definitely
I think,
is.
And I think we could just mention we probably, the plan is we'll have, next week will be our kind of wrap up for the year. So be a chance
we're
gonna
to review.
Have a bit of a look back on the year with Act.
The year that was.
Yeah.
So stand by, folks. We'll actually catch you next week.
Politics in Full Sentences. An intelligent take on the week's politics with a strong lashing of free markets and free minds.